None of this is usable.
If you didn't know, this is a Twin Peaks themed episode.
Oh, is this a Twin Peaks reference now?
Yeah, that's...
I am the arm? No, I didn't see the Showtime. Was it... It's on Showtime and it's not on Netflix or other watchables, viewables?
Not on Netflix, because Netflix doesn't play things that are currently airing. It's not a thing that Netflix does.
Yeah, but they make their own things that they air.
Your family doesn't have the Showtime?
I have Showtime, but I don't want to watch TV. What the hell is that about? Turn on a TV?
Yeah, you can get on their website and you can watch it. You can watch the first 4 episodes right now on the Showtime Now, is what it's called.
So what was last night, the 5th episode?
No. They've only aired on TV the first 2 episodes, but their streaming platform has the first 4 episodes available.
Is there a buy-in?
No.
I don't have to
buy-in.
You've
got Showtime. You can just get in there and watch it.
Oh, okay. It's like Hobogo, where if you have...
Right. Because I feel like it's important that people know where they can watch Twin Peaks. Let me just crack a cold one.
Oh, is that an Overwatch hit sound right there?
This is WTDG Podcast for the week of May 24th. I'm James Mason.
And I am your delicious, most delicious, delectable co-host, Ryan McRyan O'Patrick Fearson Kirby. May the 24th be with you.
And I'm joined today by the LaCroix Sparkling Water Coconut Flavor. Among the most intense of all seltzer flavors. Some people say that this is borderline juice. It contains no juice, Ryan. It's sodium free. It's full of natural flavors and it's very intense.
I have a LaCroix Pamplemousse.
I give this seltzer the highest marks available for a seltzer.
I like coconut itself, like coconut shavings on things, but I can't deal with coconut flavored things.
What if the coconut flavor is real coconut?
Real coconut. It's not good enough. It's weird to me still. I don't like it.
So the ingredients...
It's suntan lotion then. When it's in liquid form, it's suntan lotion. That's what it is. If I'm supposed to be drinking it and not supposed to be spreading it on my body, I don't want it to be coconut flavored.
So you're not a fan of the coconut water, for example.
Is that a suntan lotion? Should I? Because last time I got it, I put it on my body, and then I went to a beach and I got burned. So I guess it wasn't suntan lotion. It's weird that people drink that.
You know, the two ingredients in here are carbonated water and natural flavor. Everything says that it's got this natural flavor, and I'm starting to think that natural flavor is some sort of Jedi mind trick ingredient that fools you into thinking it's the flavor of whatever's in the packages.
It's not really natural coconut. It's like natural rat's feet, but rat's feet kind of, when you blend it, tastes like coconut.
See, so what I'm saying is that natural flavor, whenever natural flavor appears in an ingredient list, I think it's all the same.
It's all the exact same natural. So you're saying that there, if you should be able to go to a store and buy something called natural ingredient, natural flavor.
Natural flavor. And what that does is anything that you put it into, you put it into a beverage and you say, this is apple flavored.
Well, you could imagine some apple of that being effective. Like if you just sugarize water and then you give it to someone and say, like, you know, this is pamplemousse flavored, people are going to, some portion of the world, some human beings will drink that with pamplemousse in mind and immediately get that flavor. Like, yes, this reminds me of cracking open a grapefruit in the morning.
Like a snow cone.
Yeah.
Sure.
This discussion almost reminds me in a way of a new thing that frustrates me, that has frustrated me for a while, but I'm like more zoned in on it, more tuned in on it, and that is bagels, specifically cream cheese bagels, specifically strawberry cream cheese. And there's really two types of strawberry cream cheese. There's the kind where it's like it's mostly white and it's got like strawberries actually mixed in, and there's the kind that is like just bright pink. Like that one does not have natural flavors, right? Like that one is chemical pink. plus cream cheese equals strawberry cream cheese. And
dude, I imagine is that it's actually crazy. Strawberry puree, that they mix strawberry puree with the cream cheese.
No, because it's like a fake. Because if you mix strawberry puree with the cream cheese, I think you would get these chunks. You would still get white of the cream cheese in there. You would still get chunks. But I'm talking about like a cream cheese that does not have contain chunks of strawberries. You're eating it and it's just cream cheese. It's pink cream cheese.
Okay.
And they're calling it strawberry flavor, but you know that strawberry has never been involved with this cream cheese. Like the fruit of strawberries has never once touched this cream cheese, and yet they call it such, and it's pink. And it's what you're talking about. They put in natural flavor and like what rat's feet that is blended up and maybe makes it they tell you it is strawberry cream cheese, and your mind does the work and you think this is strawberry cream cheese. It's pink, right? It should be strawberry cream cheese, but it's really not. And that drives me crazy. If you're going to give me strawberry cream cheese, that's the telltale sign for me. Sure. Is that if there's sure. white in the cream cheese, if there's still cream cheese extant in that cream cheese, then I know that that they really did sit down and have artisans put strawberries into cream cheese and then have one of those, that big industrial mixer, scramble them up and then make strawberry cream cheese. And then if it's just all pink, then I know that you had, ingredient pink in it, and I don't want that.
Now, my local bagel shop has cream cheese with the strawberry chunks, but it's also pink.
See, what does that mean to me? I've seen that. I've encountered this before, and I don't know how to take that, because it's both sides of the coin, and it's like, no, you don't understand. Is the pink from the strawberry juice? Most likely no, because I don't think it would make it bright pink, right? Like, it would just kind of, like, make it, like, white with a pinkish tinge. And I don't like when I see that it's bright, bright pink, because I know that there's, pink ingredient. And I don't know what pink ingredient is. What is natural flavor?
Some mysteries better left as mysteries.
Yeah, I guess so. So we're down a Sean, which is unfortunate, because now recently when we're getting down a Sean, there's nothing to talk about anyway. We spend the first 12 minutes talking about pink flavored cream cheese, which is like that's what we pay him for, like we pay him to be on the podcast and give us his thoughts on cheese, etc., and creamed and the like. And he, he has no idea what a video game is. He's never seen one, never played one or experienced one. And we try and explain it to him every week and we fail, and he never understands what we're talking about.
You'd like to think that every once in a while, when we're having a cheese-themed podcast, that we might have an actual cheesemonger come on and talk about things.
It's like, this is the one cast that he could have showed up on, right? Like, we do however many casts a year. How many weeks is there in a year? What, there's 365 days. What is it? 120 weeks or some shit? What is it? 4 weeks times 12? Something like that. Not even close to 120, actually, now I think about it. 60-something.
52
weeks in a year? So,
right.
So we podcast on the regular, and, 51 of those podcasts are video game related or video game adjacent, really. And one of the podcasts a year we do is cheese-oriented. And we were discussing cream cheese on today's podcast, and the one person who has any knowledge about cheese isn't here. I don't know, it's really infuriating when you think about it, because it's like, this is specifically what we pay you for. This is what you're here for. Imagine a company hiring a retainee, like having a retainer that's a mover. A lifter, a mover, they just say, like, listen, you have the cushiest job of all time. You move the cushions when the cushions need to be moved. And, every day, those cushions don't need to be moved. So most of the days, you're going to be getting paid a 9-to-5 salary, not showing up and moving chairs, moving desks or furniture. And then the one day that the office decides to do the move out of the year, like, we got to move over. Where's our mover? Oh, sorry. He's off today. That's like, it's infuriating because it's like, this is the, you have so many days that we pay you and you just come on to the, okay, I know you're listening to this. There's so many days that we pay you that you come on and you just sit quietly and then change the subject when we're still talking about video games. And then the one podcast that we've been talking about it the entire year, the Cheese Podcast upcoming, it comes and you're not here. I don't know what to do.
I'm wondering if at this point we're just better off, you know, postponing the rest of the cheese discussion for another day and maybe doing
that
an unplanned, unthinkable video game podcast.
I want to vomit right now because I hear you saying that and it's like, I don't work around Sean's schedule, okay? Like, this is what we pay him for. He works around our schedule. So if he wants to say he has this other job, this part-time job at a cheese factory called Whole Foods, and this is his full-time job, is podcasting on WTDG Podcast. This is what pays his rent. And yet the one time we really needed him, the one time, like, he's like my friend, your friend, everyone, all the listeners and viewers' friends. And that's why we, you know, it's a nepotism kind of thing where we pay him just to sit around because we knew we do the one cheese podcast a year. And it's like, I'm doing you a favor, right? Like, I am doing you a favor when I hire you for my video game oriented podcast. We do the one cheese podcast a year. It's an annual thing. And it's like, well, I know
it's
I'm gonna need you. I know I'm gonna
it's
need
always,
you 1 year, right? It's always the last week in May. Like, you could, you like any you could have planned around this. It would have been so easy. Everyone knows it's the last week of May is EMS week, and it's also Cheese Week. I know those two things fall together because I know when EMS week rolls around, so I know it's Cheese Week too. And here we are, and you're not even you won't celebrate EMS week with me. I haven't gotten a single thank you for your service yet from you. And then it's Cheese Week on top of all that. The holidays, the weeks have overlapped this year. And yet, where are you right now? Where are you? What are you doing? I'm speaking only to one person here. I mean, we know this podcast goes out to
sorry to everyone else.
To 800 subscribers plus thousands of other people. Tens of thousands of other people that aren't, you know, man or woman or whatever enough, whatever he, she, z enough to subscribe. And I'm speaking, and they hear you, you're on blast, and I'm speaking only to you about this. And it's inferior, and it's, I'll do the video game podcast, James, but just for this week, but it's really upsetting that it's Cheese Week, and we're not going to put out a cheese-flavored podcast, okay?
I know, you don't have to tell me. Because
I know I'm yelling at you, but it's like I don't mean to sound angry at you. Like, you know, I'm not angry at you or the listeners. It's just that, you know, here we are, you know, Cheese Week, EMS Week. Is the podcast going to be about cheese? No.
Ryan, what video games have you been playing?
I wanted to talk to you this week about this really good truffle Gouda that I got, but I guess I'll leave it for next week. Okay. I guess I'll leave it for next week and I'll just talk about video games.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about Manchego, but...
This is so... But hold that, James, even though it might go bad by next week. I hope that it stays good. I hope that it stays fresh.
Me too. So,
for one more week while we wait on our cheese expert to be here on this Cheese Week. May the 24th be with you. Whatever.
Ryan, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Dead Cells. I've been playing Dead Cells. I've been playing lots of HOTS. I've been playing Overwatch Anniversary.
So let's talk about a couple of things. So Dead Cells, I'm not familiar with that. Is that a game that released, that's out, available for public consumption?
Incorrect. We got an early screening because we have 800 plus subscribers, and then, as I said, tens of thousands of people that listen to the podcast, but
which allows us access to we get access to this special section of the Steam store, called Early Access.
Yes, that is specifically for, you know, people like us,
experts
in games, so that we can curate the games before they come out. And a lot of it is like, some of it is what Steam does this for, is so that they don't just release a bunch of garbage on the platform. The idea is that, you know, experts like myself, like you, not like Sean, because his expert and what we pay him for is cheese. So you would think he would be on this cheese-themed podcast, but whatever.
Sean gets another privilege. He has a badge. I've seen it. And it legally allows him to eat cheese before the cheese is ripe.
Yes, it does. And you know what's weird is that I didn't know this about selling cheese, but if you have cheese, he can eat it. Like, it's kind of like, it's weird the way that works, but like, let's say you're eating a sandwich and you've got a slice of provolone on it. He can eat your sandwich. Or at the very least, like, if you don't want him to eat the sandwich, like, you can say, I know my rights. You're only allowed to eat the provolone. You're only allowed to nibble on my provolone. He is allowed to remove the provolone entirely, or, because I know that some cheesemongers abuse their privilege, he could just take a big nasty bite out of that sandwich because there's provolone in it, which means that he has the privilege, he has the right to try the cheese. So if you ever have cheese around someone who is... got that card, got their cheese license, then they can just take a big bite out of it, and you can't do anything about it.
I've encountered these cheesemongers before who think that this involves any dairy product, so they'll say something like,
I've seen that. That's an abuse, though.
I take your milkshake and I drink it.
But what is milk if not pre-cheese?
But it's not, because there's the Cheese Association of America, the CAA, which clearly defines the boundaries between different dairy products. And they say that there's a line where milk turns to cheese, where, and you know, this happens on the full moon, typically. And
I think there's a lot of, like, isn't there a lot of scooping? They put the milk in that,
of course,
in the wooden bowl, and then they have the bow staff, and then they scoop the milk until it becomes cheese, and it only happens once a month.
And they slap it with the cheesecloth.
You know what's weird? Is this would have been a perfect podcast to be about cheese, because not only is this Cheese Week, but this is the full moon on Cheese Week, which only happens once every three decades, you get a full moon on a Cheese Week, and it lines up with the MS Week. I mean, it's not, like, it couldn't have been more perfect to be talking about cheese on this podcast.
Right. But Dead Cells.
I got a good truffle Gouda, but I guess I'll talk about it.
So what's interesting about Dead Cells is that, you know, this is a game where you're talking about dead cells. The thing about cheese is that cheese is actually created off of living cultures.
Yeah, it's a live cell. So, it's lit live cells.
So it's really just a great discussion topic. What can you tell me about this early access game on Steam called Dead Cells?
Is it like, if you is the cheesecloth, like, that is what makes it the cheese? Or because the yogurt is like spoiled milk, right? They put bacteria in it, and then cheese is also like spoiled thickened milk, so I don't know, like, there must be some sort of like thickening agent. What does the cheesecloth do? They run the milk through the cheesecloth.
You just slap it with the cheesecloth, and the more you slap it, the sharper the cheese gets.
Oh, okay.
It's like a whetstone, but for cheese.
That makes so much sense when I think about it, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, unrelated to cheese, on this Cheese Week, EMS Week podcast, is Dead Cells, which is early access, as we said. There are some incomplete things, like placeholdery stuff, but the game plays very well, so I would I haven't seen much that would lead me to believe that, like, it's got a far ways to go, but I've only played an hour, so maybe that will reveal itself later on. But it's very polished so far. But it is a roguelite Metroidvania game. I guess that's the way that they describe it.
Wow, that's a lot of video game buzzwords. How about you break that down for the newcomers here who just want to know what's the deal with games?
So what is the deal with games? So I'm going to explain this, like, maybe the best way to explain it is kind of in the order of things of happening. So there's no tutorial. Like, you start out and you're going. You are in a, it's a pixel art, very beautiful, very well animated game where you're starting out in a dungeon, in a cell, if you will. And you are this nasty clump of dead cells, I guess, and then you overtake a corpse in the cell, wake up, and this guy's talking to you like, hey, you've been here before, try not to die. Or so he says stuff like that. Then you go up, you have a regular sword, you have like a crappy sword on X, and you have, and then there's a bow and arrow, a starter bow and arrow, and a starter shield. And you can choose to pick up one, only allowed to pick up one, and set that to Y. Actually, you could take both if you wanted, and drop your sword. But, so you have two weapons at a time, one of them being, like a throwing weapon, a melee weapon, a shield, or spells, magic, can also be on, set to your XY primary kind of weapons. So then you're going along these 2D... planes of like locked doors and it's like platforming sections, climbing up chains to get to different areas where you're killing enemies, and the enemies are dropping dead cells, and they're dropping gold. And gold is largely spent for things in run, so like paying gold to open a locked chest, a locked room, paying gold at finding a vendor. Oh, everything is randomized. All the layouts of the area is randomized each death. And when you die, there's the roguelite part. You get set back to the jail cell, but it's been randomized again. The cells at the end of a full like section, like a world. Other roguelikes do this where it's like, you know, you're in the jail cell area, and then after that you get into this more open like water swamp zone, and after you finish the first zone and go to the next pallet swapped area, there is a like vendor guy that you can trade your cells to for account progression. So stuff like start off every run with a HP flask, different like you know count buffs, like when you die keep some of your gold. You can power up individual weapons, like because you're finding random equipment, right? Like you find like a blood sword, once you find those equipment, that type of equipment, when you find the vendor at the end of the level, you can spend your cells on upgrading different specific equipment or upgrading account things, like, you know, your flasks, your gold on death, saving gold on death.
So you would upgrade like a blood sword, and then it would be like, okay, so every time that I find this blood sword, it'll have 25% more damage.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. For blood swords specifically, I believe you're upgrading its bleed amount.
This sounds a lot like Rogue Legacy. More so than any other game.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I didn't spend a ton of time with Rogue Legacy, but to make it even more clear and to break that all down again, you die, you start over again. You're killing enemies for that. It's giving you gold, which is in run progression stuff, but also, as I said, you can upgrade account to keep the gold post death. And then there's cells, which you spend at the end of a contiguous level. On account progression stuff that is never lost upon death, that upgrades the equipment you'll find, the character, the gives you bonuses like, better, higher damage, Save the gold, more HP flasks, these two kind of things. I haven't found all of them. You also are getting materials. You are also getting blueprints to be able to spend so that you can find certain weapons. Like, you'll unlock a, you'll get a blueprint, go to a vendor, and now the vendor will say, okay, now spend 10 cells so that when you do the run, you'll have their chance of finding this item in the wild. Okay, this is not, cool. I don't think I'm saying new things here. Like, yeah, those no, are, these are elements, right, of roguelites.
Roguelites.
Yes. Yeah. Like a roguelite, you die, you lose nearly everything, but you're able to spend things mid-run on account progression.
You live, you die, you live again.
Yes.
All right.
The game has a great feeling to it. These are the kind of things that, like, I would be more worried about if they were bad. Like, the just the enemies are diverse and you have to learn how to fight them, to fight them effectively. The weapons have a good feel and are pretty varied in the way that they, like, swing. Like, some of them are obviously, like, slower but do more damage. Some of them add bleed effects. The range weapons have, like, different fall-offs and stuff like that. So they're good for different reasons. The spells are interesting. Those are all important things. They feel right. They have a good, like, brutal feel to it. Enemies, you know, like you whack an enemy a few times, they explode into gold and cells and stuff. I think one of the things that a selling point always with roguelites is things happening in a run that are random or lucky or weird. Do you know what I mean? Like, you see these, like, one-off things that is like, wow, that's interesting. I wonder if I'd ever see that again. So a few of those, to name a few, I encountered a door that said this door locked a minute and 30 seconds ago, which is interesting because that means that, like, it's completely locked for that run. I can't ever open it, but it means that there would be times where if I was moving through a world fast, an area fast enough, I would find a door that is on a timer that I'm not aware of that could be anywhere. And I don't know what would be behind that door. It seemed like an entire area was locked off behind that door.
That's right, it is.
I found a cursed chest where I opened it, but it set my health to 1. And if I killed 10 enemies in a row, I would drop the curse. So what I mean by all that is, like, there's cool stuff. Like, I think that's a really important aspect of roguelike is, like, you know, it's not just the weapons and the drops and finding things that upgrade your health, attack damage, or ability stuff. It's finding these little weird quirky things of, like, oh wow, this is super lucky. I got a curse chest. I decided to open it knowing that it was going to set me to 1 health for X amount of enemy kills. And it ended up working out and it made a good run for it. So there's cool stuff like that. I have yet to see some of the stuff. Some of the stuff that I think is most important in roguelikes are modifiery kind of things. Like, I really like when you find a modifier that says, you know, like Gungeon does this pretty well, where it's like, you know, your weapons fire X amount faster or have more ammo or have, like, infinite ammo or something. And it's like, well, it combos well with my rocket launcher. Like, it'll be like a thing where it's like, well, that's a really slow weapon, but now I have it firing extremely fast, so it breaks the game a little bit. But like the you have, like, lucky things that are overlapping and break the game, and I have yet to see that be a thing. Like, it's more like, I think the luck at the moment would be more like, wow, I'm glad I found this weapon that I like, but it's not necessarily that, like, it makes for, like, a broken build. It's just the weapon is good. So,
there's certainly not as many weapons as in a game like Gungeon.
I would have incredible doubts about that. I don't know if that's true. I can't speak to it because, like I said, there are unlockable weapons that you have to find a blueprint, and then not only do you have to find a blueprint, but you have to survive your way to the end of one level to cash in the blueprint, and then after that you have to spend the cells to unlock the weapon for runs. So there's roguelite stuff going on here. It feels good. There's early accessy stuff where I talked to a when you start off a run, there's this room that kind of shows you what you've unlocked so far. It's actually a huge room that shows all the weapons you've unlocked, which I have, like, none of them, floating in these jars. And there's an NPC that says, like, I'll tell you stats on how well you've done in the last run and overall. And then when you talk to him and it's like, show me my stats, it's like placeholder. Like, it doesn't show you any stats and I can't display that yet. So there's stuff like that, but the gameplay is there, and it feels good. And that's an important thing. Like, it's good the way that it has a visceral, you know, response, feel. It's like you got all the things that make it feel good, like big hits that make the screen shake a little bit. The sprites react well to it. Finding a better weapon makes you instantly be better, so it's got a lot of promise in it, and I look forward to ruining the experience for myself before early access is done and then not playing it after it comes out of early access.
So they're about 50% complete on features. The game only has, I think, two bosses right now, and after you beat the second boss, I'm pretty sure that there's sort of an abrupt end. And they're saying that early access is going to be there for the next 8 to 12 months.
Shite.
Just to give you an idea about things. Also, as an aside, and sort of like as a transition, a game similar to Dead Cells, but more similar to Hollow Knight, recently made its way to Kickstarter. It's called Blasphemous, and it's got a very good pixely art style to it as well. And it's not a roguelite or a roguelike. You've heard this before. It's a Metroidvania and Dark Souls together, which seems to be kind of a popular.
I mean, I would say that Dead Cells is like a Dark Souls as well. It's, you know, it's like it's got some of the Dark Souls elements, like being very. I mean, because it's a roguelike, I guess maybe that loses Dark Souls feeling, because Dark Souls is like you die, you go back to a corpse to find it. Otherwise, if you die again, you don't get what you want. But it's got that Dark Souls like punishing combat, like you like very oriented on punish. I guess that's also roguelike, so maybe it's not fair to say Dark Souls.
However, this game Blasphemous doesn't. It has a handcrafted world, which I think is really important to the Dark Souls formula, and it's also non-linear in that you can go to areas that maybe you shouldn't be in yet, things like that. And it took under 24 hours for them to reach their project goal of $50,000, and now they're
that's a lot of cheese, right?
Yeah, but not for a lot not of for Gouda? Developing a video game. I
no,
mean,
it's not
even. That's not even a year's salary.
I really just wanted to say cheese.
Well, there you go. But as they fill out their stretch goals, they're going to have a daily challenge.
For me, that's a year's salary, so you can
new game plus
hold that.
Yeah, but it's not a game developer.
Mr. Money Man.
Well, maybe it is a game developer salary. Hard to say. But either way, I mean, it looks like a pretty cool game. It's going to be on Kickstarter for the next 27 days. You can pre-purchase the game for $25. And that'll also give you access to the game's beta. And then they have some interesting physical rewards as well that include posters, art books. One of them that's very cool is this sort of layered picture scape. It's sort of like a three-dimensional poster that is a screenshot of the game. It's pretty cool. And that's my pitch. I'm saying this because I'm a backer.
I'm glad that the developers spent money for this ad spot that we gave them.
Well, there you go. But the more that people invest in it, the more I get out of being a backer. So there you go.
Yep. You scratch my backer, I scratch yours, right?
Right on. So what else you got going on this week? I heard you say Overwatch Anniversary.
Indeed, I said Overwatch Anniversary, James.
So there's another Overwatch event with more items in loot boxes.
Some really good ones.
Did you buy loot boxes?
What a question to ask, James. Like, I have said before on this very podcast that Blizzard and I have a deal where when they release new boxes, they automatically debit my accounts, double my credit, my credits and debits. That's how.
So you spent $43.44 on some loot boxes.
Exactly so. Exactly so.
What were you looking to get?
What was I looking to get? Some of the dances are fantastic. I was looking for the Harihari May dance, and I got it.
Okay.
And I got it.
Well, there you go.
I got a weird amount of doubles. Like every legendary I got at least one other of them. I got three of the new D.Va cruising skin, which I don't know.
They must be borrowing Hearthstone's algorithm.
Yeah, I know, right? They came over to the Team 5 devs and they're like, hey, we really wanted to figure out how you make it so that even when people buy a lot of boxes, they get good things, and it show, and on a graph it would show that they do get consistent legendaries, but we want to really not give them as much as that sounds like, so how can we make it so that they double up a lot of legendaries? And they did. So I got I believe three of the Cruiser D.Va skin, which is pretty good, but it also exists in a world with some with the Chinese New Year D.Va, and it also exists in a world with Police D.Va, so I don't know why she has gotten like three legendary skins that are fantastic in the span of like 3 months. So that's ridiculous. I got the Sentaku Ranger Genji. That's a pretty good skin, but Oni Genji, very sick. He's got some really good skins. He's not really hurting for skins. What else did I get? I didn't get the Hanzo one, which is one of my favorites. I really like the Hanzo one, and they just buffed him.
Well, regardless of what you get, what else is going on with this event? So there's three new arena maps, which is good, because I love it when a game developer, you know, respects and adds on to the modes that no one is playing.
Yes.
Definitely appreciate arena maps more than I would Payload or Control or something that actually sees play. But hey, maybe now that those arena maps are in there, maybe it'll sort of draw more people to that. I could see that 3v3 being pretty cool. And Kaplan was talking about the lore behind some of the maps, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I can't think of what else I got.
Aside from that, I mean, like, their event is just new skins and here's more arcade maps, right?
And here's another bad Zarya skin.
So that's the event.
Another bad Zarya skin. What do you guys have against her? What do you have against her? The HOTS team gave her the Thunder God and Cyber Demon skins, which are incredible, especially Cyber Demon. Looks really cool. It's a Genji version of Zarya. What do you have against her? I don't understand. I don't know why why the Overwatch team hates her so much. Why do you hate her so much? And then they were saying, when people were like, why does Zarya get horrible skins? They're like, well, no, wait for, you know, upcoming is some really good Zarya legendaries. And then they pull this shit out. Like, what is that? It looks horrible. It looks horrendous. And again, it covers her face, which is a big problem I have, because the faces in Overwatch are so expressive and they're what really makes the character. And yet you cover her face with a big dumb golden mask and then give her these like plastic, you know, mecha, early 90s mecha armor. Like, what happened, guys? What happened?
So is there anything else to actually say about Overwatch?
The dances are good. The significance of this, I think, mainly was that they added, didn't they add this to the regular loot box?
Oh, you
wish.
Or am
I crazy? Oh, no, they didn't.
No, 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 no.
Okay, so this is timed.
This is timed.
Well, there you go. Wow.
Bothered a lot of people.
There's a lot to get in this one too. A lot of Legos, a lot of dances. Like, there's a lot to get in these boxes.
It's aggravating though, slightly, because there are people who have everything out of those regular base loot boxes. And they'd probably like to have a few more things in there. You would think that this anniversary event would be maybe prime time, the best time to add new stuff to these to the base loot boxes, but not the case, I guess. What are they waiting on?
I don't know. I think that they, at this point, what they need to do is they should retire and make the old base loot box, like all those, like retire all that where you can't get it from a box anymore, and maybe like once a year in during Overwatch Anniversary Edition or during the anniversary, they let you get the original base skins and stuff, but maybe retire it and add a new loot box where everything would be new to players, like, again, where...
I think they did that after a year. Year, so 2 years.
Yeah.
So after 2 years, they cycle out the last year. And if you go into ranked mode, you can only play using the cosmetics from the previous 2 years. They can call it Year of the Junkrat.
Yes. That was excellent.
Ryan, what else you got on your plate?
It is kind of sad though, right? Like, yeah. The skins, some of them are pretty good. There's some good stuff. The dances are fantastic. Thank you for the new emotes. They definitely add a lot to characters and stuff. But, you know, no new map, no new character, no crazy new brawl. Like, they added some maps to to what you said, like the small brawl area maps, but they didn't do anything with it. Like, if they had done a new type of brawl, like the way they did the May offensive, like the May snowball offensive thing on that Eco Point Antarctica. So if they had done a crazy, like, you know, Sombra on map hack thing on that Sombra map, then there would be a little something to go along with the event. But it's really just a cosmetic loot box event, right? From what I see, it's not really, it really not add anything. Like, maybe not the best way to celebrate a year.
Maybe not. What else have you got going on? Did I hear Heroes of the Storm?
Playing HOTS all the time. Loving HOTS.
So I recently got ranked in HOTS. Played by 10 places. I went 7-3, and I was placed in Gold 1. Halfway through Gold 1, so almost Platinum.
Oh, neato.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
I played Brightwing almost exclusively for my ranked games.
I haven't played much of the ranked yet. I'm still, like, loving quick play with my friends and stuff, and really working on getting the characters that I'm really interested in. I just got Probius. That's a really cool character. I got Abathur, which is a really wonky, awesome character that I always wanted to try out. Now I can.
I hit my head on the microphone, but I'm listening.
Probius is a really neat character. That maybe they didn't nail what the character should have been, which I believe, like, in my mind, should have been like a worker unit that builds up structures. I mean, it does kind of, but I think it should be able to, like, repair bases and stuff. But he's kind of cool, design wise, because he has to, like, place down pylons, and then he can build turrets in range of the pylons, and also while he's in range of the pylons is the only way he's able to recover mana, because if he's outside the range of pylons, then he has no mana regeneration. His other abilities are a warp drive thing that he can stack two of at a time, that puts an AoE field down where enemies step in and it slows them down, and then he also has a Q projectile that can regularly hit enemies, but also if you hit the warp drive while it's active, you'll detonate it and do a lot of damage. So he's a pretty interesting character, because he's, like, very weak on his own, but has a lot of zoning potential, where you're like trying to post up in a lane, put down pylons, put down turrets, create, like, warp drives to be safe so that people can't really jump on you, and then when enemies go near the warp drives, detonate them. Pretty cool character. I believe like the highest win rate of any of the characters right now.
That's right.
Other than that, been really loving Gul'dan, Rexxar, Alarak got a rework to give him, and I think it was very successful, very fun, like, gave him a little bit more diversity in the builds. Can go for like a Q build or an E build, and do stuff that plays around with sadism. I think that it was interesting because before Alarak used to be, like, Alarak's main, his, like, passive ability is that he does 100% extra damage to enemy heroes, and it's called sadism. And there used to be, there still is, but, like, the idea around it was, like, you would get these talents sometimes that would build up sadism or would lose sadism for a very strong trade-off. So stuff like he has a teleport that he can, like, target an area, then target a direction, and then move himself or enemies that are caught in that, like, teleport. So you can either use it to, like, engage or disengage or to pull an enemy towards him to combo them. And you used to be able to, and actually, I don't know, I keep saying you used to be able to, because you still are, able to spend 10 sadism in the talents to make it so that your teleport goes further, has a longer range and goes further. So it's like you're weighing off, you know, your overall damage for stuff that you're trading off overall percentage hero damage for stuff that will help you do more damage overall or quality of life stuff, make you, like, more of a threat that way. And I think they've made it much better because, like, now he gets a lot of, like, passive sadism through kills and takedowns and stuff like that, and through talents. So there's more sadism to get and more sadism to trade off. And he loses the bonus sadism a lot of times on death. So he's a really interesting character.
Never played him. Good to know, though.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
One thing that's pretty nice about HOTS is just really that consistent release of characters. You know, it wasn't so long that we were playing, and then, you know, we started playing again. Genji came out immediately after that. D.Va comes out. And that means that another character is probably coming out in 2 weeks, right? I mean, that's a nice turnaround.
Yeah, I was hoping for that character to already be announced by now, but...
And it's also very generous in terms of getting characters. I haven't really bought anything since the game came out, but I've received a lot of characters for free.
Yeah, it's a very good time to play HOTS.
Especially before that event ends.
Yeah, I still recommend it really highly. Like, to anyone who hasn't tried it out, like, this is really the time to try it out. Not just for the Overwatch things, if you're an Overwatch fan, but because I think that the hero bundles, the free 20 hero pack of 20 heroes, is such an incredible selling point. Like, it's an awesome thing to start off if you've never played it before, if you're coming back, like, get this huge grip of characters you've never played before or seen before, and really start off with a good base of characters and diversity on the account. And that really, like, pulled me back in, and the game itself is so good at this point that I've stayed in. I'm surprised, because it's like, it's weird to go back to pre 2.0 and think, like, I remember saying on the podcast, like, this, like, the hero bundle and the loot box, the addition of loot boxes that not only unlock cosmetics but can unlock full heroes and giving people who come back a ton of loot boxes was enough for me to try out a game I thought was like for sure dead. And I thought, you know, I'm going to try it out, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to stick with it. And, like, I really did stick with it, and I've been playing it constantly, so much so that it has put every other game on the back burner.
And there you go. Ryan is wrong.
I'm wrong sometimes, I know. I'm pointing out my wrongness.
That's right. Suck it.
Suck it past me. Current me is right about how good HOTS is. Past me was wrong. When was that? That would have been like almost a month ago at this point. The 2.0 right. Came out. That past me was so wrong.
There you go.
I don't know. I guess in other news, in life news, I moved.
Move.
Don't get too excited. Don't get too excited. I moved downstairs. So it is not a big move. It's not a big move, but it does come with it the frustrations of a big move, where it's like you have to pack everything, move all the furniture. Like, it comes with those frustrations of like, oh, now I gotta spend so long putting my room together again, but it's not like I went very far. the main reason I bring this up is because I went from a hardwire internet connection to an adapter to Wi-Fi, and holy shit, how have people been doing this? Oh my god. Gaming has gotten so much worse instantly.
You need to get a really nice router. That's the secret.
I do, I guess, right? I got a really nice router.
I got a router that's so good that when I'm walking my dog, I'm outside and I've got internet down the block.
Yeah, my internet is from two rooms away, and right now my signal strength is 70 and my link quality was 80 and it went up to 100%. But like my point is like 72 right now, that's my signal strength. I'm like a room away from that, or multiple rooms away. I it frustrates me that I'm not hardwired anymore. Maybe I do need to get a new router. Like that, would you think that would affect it more than anything?
Absolutely, yeah. Most definitely. That is the
number
thing.
One thing. Yeah, I forget how old this router is. Maybe if I got another one. And I don't remember that being too frustrating to set up. You just have to go on to like what that I like. You put in the IP in the address bar in like Google and or in an internet browser, and then you set up the everything. Set up the code.
Yeah, you just do the internet things. I'm gonna link you to the router that I own, so that you have it.
The Nighthawk AC1750, and if you're wondering, that's not a drone that we use to kill our enemies. It's a router that we use to kill enemies online. That James does. That maybe I will in the future.
That's right. It's pretty affordable for what it is. I recommend it. So
that's been
a big
problem for me.
Yeah. Most of my free time recently has been, when I'm in transit, I've been playing a lot of Disgaea.
How's that going? Didn't that come for English?
Yeah, it actually released on the North American Switch store today, or yesterday, rather.
Wow. So,
Disgaea is a really good game if you like to grind. And I think that means that it lends itself very well to the Switch, because for me, the Switch is really a grinding console. Essentially, when I have time to kill, when I'm sitting down somewhere, I have my Switch out. I also ended up buying a battery pack, like a rechargeable battery, a power bank is what it's called. And it keeps an additional 20 hours of battery on it. So
that's pretty dank right there, 20 hours.
Yeah, and it fits in the carrying case. That the Switch travels in, so no problem. Just when I'm done playing, I could plug it in to the Switch and then just put it away, and it's charging. Or I could charge it while I'm playing. That works too. But Disgaea is very similar to Final Fantasy Tactics again. And for me, a lot of the draw to this game is unlocking different classes. So as you level classes to specific levels, you get quests that will unlock other characters. So if you want to get an archer, then you have to get a fighter class and a healer up to rank 2. And then if you get the archer class up to rank 3, then it unlocks like the pirate.
Okay.
I think that, yeah. So it was weird unlocking the archer, but I think the purpose of it was weird, right? Because you wouldn't think that you would use a healer to get the archer. But the thing is that they want to make sure that you're leveling up and that you're developing your starting classes, healer being one of the most important ones. So I think that from then on out, the unlocks start to make a little bit more sense.
Okay.
In terms of what you're unlocking to get things, like to get the samurai, you're doing, I think, the thief and the warrior, or the ninja and the warrior, stuff like that. But there are like a ton of classes, and classes feel very unique from one another. Your character is built based on two things. It's based on the weapon that they're using and based on their character class. So you have weapon and also the character's personality. You choose all these different things about a character when you create them. Like you, based on how much money you want to invest when you scout for a new character, that determines the amount of attribute points that you're given for the strength of that character. And then you sort it in how you want. They let you know like what the recommended stats are for any given character class. Obviously, a mage would want more intelligence, a tank would want more HP. But the more that you're willing to spend, the more base points they give you to invest. So then you choose the personality type, which determines their voice and some of the moves that they can use. And then the weapon. So different character classes have affinity towards different weapons. Now, they can learn to use any weapon they want, but a character who's more attuned to a specific weapon will learn how to use it faster.
Okay.
And the weapons themselves have different unique move sets to them. So every character who uses fists is going to have access to, let's say, Hurricane Blow or Triple Fist or Phantom Fist and things like that. But they also have moves that are unique to their character class. So it's kind of a cool balance that way of making your characters, lets you also have a lot of customization and a lot of degree of like, I want my character to be able to do this. Well, you could do it. You can have a mage with a gun. Maybe I wouldn't recommend it, but you could do it. But it's also based on the fact that certain weapons have affinity of different stats. So one statistic is called hit, and that determines your accuracy rating, but it also determines your ability to deal damage with guns and with specific gun-related special skills. So there's really just like a lot going on in terms of how the characters are built. One thing that's slightly weird about Disgaea 5 Complete for the Nintendo Switch is that it has all of the DLC for Disgaea 5. And starting out, some of that stuff is really powerful, like really, really powerful. So you'll get characters that can outright one-shot the enemies just because of the fact that they have like a signature weapon that character has always had that's really important to the story or whatever, or at least to that character, that just sort of makes the game a little bit less balanced. And it makes me, those characters have made it hard for me to know what my current power level should be. But I think that at around level like 15 to 20, those characters start to even out with the rest of the group because you start finding or stealing better weapons than those characters have. And that sort of makes them feel a little bit more on an even playing field. And they also have access to unique skills, which is pretty cool because with this Disgaea 5 Complete, you're really getting like just a ton of content. This game is jam-packed, which makes it such a good fit for the Switch. It's I think it's only slightly smaller in a file size than Breath of the Wild, which is surprising when you consider the graphical fidelity of Breath of the Wild versus the graphical fidelity of Disgaea. I think it really means that a lot of the file size is devoted to just how much content is packed into this game. And it really goes on forever because there's separate from the main story, there's all of the side stuff that you're worrying about, one of which is called the Item World. So the Item World is a place that you can go that lives inside every item in the game.
Wow.
Any random item that you find has a world inside of it that you can go into. And as you go through it, you're increasing the power of that item. If it's a healing item, it might heal for more. If it's an equipable, it might give you additional stats and stuff like that. So I'm going to be playing a lot of Disgaea 5 until Splatoon comes
out. What do you do in that game, though? Like, what is, like, do you have any goal? Are you going up, like, a tower, or is there a campaign? Like, what are you doing, in the game?
There's a story where you're going through the Netherworld, and there's all these sorts of So you're a demon, and you are working. There's like there's two main characters. One of them is this brilliant fighter, an amazing, just like really good combat tactics, but he's not an overlord. But he meets up with this female overlord who has the ability to pretty much like charm anyone. Like her abilities are all charm based, and she can charm men, yada yada. But you're going up against
the humor in these games is pretty.
Terrible. I think that the story is kind of lame, but essentially what you're doing is you're going through the world and you're bolstering your demon army so that you could go up against this big bad demon overlord called the Void Dark.
Okay.
I think that for the most part, like the character, like aesthetically, the characters look pretty good and the game has a good style to it. But I think that the writing is cheesy and it's lame, but it kind of has always been that way.
Yeah.
Like, Disgaea doesn't take itself seriously. And also, like, some of the side characters actually have, like, some kind of funny writing to them. But just, like, the main line story is such an eye roll.
Hmm.
But again, in terms of core gameplay, I recommend it. There's a demo out. this is a game that might be challenging to demo, because one of the things that is so much fun is being like, I want to create a trio of wizards, all who focus on the three different magics. And I just want to get through the game playing these three mages and see them go through the stages of red mage, blue mage, and green mage. And you could do that. But then there's also all this other weird ancillary tactical stuff to the game. Like I talked about last time, that you can lift a character and throw them sort of to help their placement, because some characters have very low speed, but you could take a tank character or someone with extremely high damage who has very low speed, and you could take a series of fast characters, and just throw them around the board so that they can get to different places. But another thing that you could do that's very strange is you can create
That other thing wasn't that strange. So tell me the strange thing.
You can stack characters on top of one another.
Okay.
And create a giant tower of characters by stacking them one on top of each other. And the higher your character tower is, you get a further attack range, because you attack by slamming down on the enemies, which is pretty silly. But it's also, there's some tactical advantages to it. Like, it allows you to keep weak characters safe by putting them at the top of this tower. And at the same time, it lets you, when an enemy dies by the tower, everybody inside the tower levels up. So it's also a way that you could use to farm. So you're limiting yourself in terms of your tactics, but you're doing so to increase your XP gain. So none of the characters who are in the tower have access to any of their skills. All they can do is bash down on enemies with the giant tower to gain extra experience. But it's such a weird thing, though, right?
Yeah.
It's weird. But yes, you don't need to do it, and you don't need to know it, but there's all of this, there's all sorts of shit like that. There's also, like, all these modifiers that you could put on your party, where you hold a meeting, like some sort of like democratic meeting, and someone raises a bill and they says, like, I want to get more experience points and make less money. And then you try to pass that bill through the Demon Council by bribing them with different things that you find, and you need to figure out what each member of the Demon Council wants and likes so that you could get them to pass this bill, so that you could change the rules of the way that the game works, or introduce new items into shops, or just like shortcut certain things. It's really bizarre. And the thing that's weird is that, you know, this is Disgaea 5. You imagine that all of this stuff has been added to the series over years. And the funny thing is that most of the weird shit in Disgaea has been there from the very first one.
Yes. Sure enough.
That's my Disgaea moment. I'm about 12 hours into the game, and I'm digging it. And I think that it's a really great thing to play on Switch if you're just looking for something to kill time with. It's got really good production values. It is as close as you're going to get to Final Fantasy Tactics. It's extremely involved. And it's a good holdover until Splatoon.
E3 is coming up.
E3 is coming up, and Nintendo is going to be there.
Very excited to see what they have to say about the Switch. I'm really hoping that it's not just, you know, the Switch is out, Zelda's out, it's going well. Arms is here, it's playable. Like, I really hope that it is stuff like,
I'm gonna try out
like
arms.
Here's
There's
some
a
big stuff that arms. That you can look forward to that might be coming out this year or early next year. So
there's also a demo of arms. There's also a demo of Disgaea 5 up in the shop for people who have a Switch but don't know if that's something they're interested in. I really hope that Nintendo does something where they say, we're happy to announce our virtual console. It's out now. Here's some games you can play.
Okay.
That'd be sweet. I'd be into that.
I heard really bad things about the new Street Fighter, or the old Street Fighter, Street Fighter 2.
I don't need to play that.
I never needed it. And Street Fighter 5 is getting the big patch on the 30th, May the 30th be with you, where they're getting Ed and the new Capcom Fight Network and all the balance changes and everything. So look forward to it. 6 days. Look forward to it.
Do you have any interest in Injustice?
Wow, I'm surprised you brought it up. I don't like NetherRealm Studios games that much. I hate the way that the characters animate. It's really hard for me to look at, and I don't like their overall balance, and watching a decent amount of Injustice, like, the zoning is pretty insane in the game, and it's not, like, it, to me, it's, like, wonky zoning, because with something like Street Fighter, when you have zoning, you know, someone throws out a, like, Ryu throws out a Hadouken, it's this big, very visual thing on the screen, the proportions, like, where its hitboxes and everything makes a lot of sense. But there's a lot of characters, and there's, like, Deadshot especially, I mean, who has a lot of ranged abilities, uses guns. So, like, they're not really projectiles that you could react to or do anything with, or avoid. Like, he either is shooting them or not shooting them. They're more like a Dalsim limb. And they're, like, full screen and hard and impossible to see, really. Like, you're just getting hit by... And it's, like... The zoning in Injustice is effective enough that, like, in Street Fighter, zoning exists more as, like, a keep-out, keep-away game. Like, you keep throwing Hadoukens, you condition opponent into thinking, like, when thinking that they can jump, then they jump, and then you anti-air them, and, like, you're getting damage that way, and keeping the person out and keeping them from doing combos, whereas in Injustice, like, the character that's doing the zoning... is, like, doing full zoning damage combos. Like, you can just win games by just straight-up zoning, and, like, that looks horrible. I think that, overall, yeah, like, the... I hate the way that the game animates. The characters look really weird and stiff, and it's, like, a constant uncanny valley kind of thing in that game where, like, every character's face and animations make me uncomfortable to look at. Like, every single thing in the game is hard to look at. So, there's my answer. I kind of like the way that the NetherRealm's games play, too, which is kind of unfortunate. Like, I do like Mortal Kombat. I do like the overall feel of juggle combos. Like, they're all dial a combo, and they're all juggle. So, like, they got a good feel to them there and everything like that. I don't really have an interest in superheroes, so, like, the you know, DC sure. cast does nothing for me. Yeah, it looks visually horrible. Very boring watching pro play of it. There seems like very few characters that are viable at the moment. And the zoning is horrendous to watch, and I hate looking at all the animations. I hate everything I see when I'm looking at it.
I heard that the story mode for it is actually pretty interesting, though.
Well, NetherRealms kills it with the story modes. Like, the Mortal Kombat 8 story mode was super memorable, super amazing. I didn't really play 9 or 10, but...
That's right. And so moving on a bit, we might want to talk a little bit about Destiny 2, but I also want to say that I've been playing Persona still. I'm very far along in a certain relative of a main character's palace.
Oh, wow.
So... I've been there. I think it's about the same area where you are, maybe a little bit further than you. That is a game that I'm looking to complete before I move on to other games.
Yes.
I've locked it down with my waifu, Hifumi, which is a challenging waifu to lock down because you need a rank 5 knowledge to lock that down.
B-tier waifu.
No,
I disgrace your waifu right now on the podcast.
What was that? That's not
I've
nice.
Disgraced your waifu. I've glove slapped you.
She has probably the best skill set in the game in terms of what she allows you to do.
Yeah, what does she allow you to do?
The best character is actually Kiwami me? In terms of what you get to do. Kiwami's rank 10 is just the best skill in the game.
Oh, yeah? I don't even know what it is. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
Kawakami? Right, Yes.
The teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you said Tokiden Kiwami, and I was like, that's a different game. That's not Persona.
Her rank 10 skill is the best. Oh, and also, speaking of Tokiden Kiwami, I got a Nintendo Switch Pro controller.
Speaking of, okay.
Because I got it to play PC.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was thinking about playing Tokiden, and I was like, that's a game that's really good with a controller. My 360 controller is starting to die out. So what I did is I bought a little Bluetooth widget that just plugs into a USB port. I got this Nintendo Switch Pro controller, which I just hit against the table and made a loud sound.
Yes, we heard it. I believe that you have it.
got an 80-hour battery life, which is pretty sweet.
It's wireless. It's amazing.
And it just works natively with the PC if you just have that Bluetooth receiver. 10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Yeah. I also saw the Surge. That game looks pretty interesting. That might be worth checking out. It's Dark Souls, sci-fi Dark Souls, because everything is Dark Souls plus something. It's sci-fi Dark Souls, so I know that you're a character that's supposed to be an engineer that goes to a space station or something where they're doing bioengineering and mech suits and stuff like that, and by the time you've gotten there, a la Dead Space, things have gone wrong, and it's melee combat where you are fighting an enemy and then performing a finishing move to lop off to amputate one of their limbs and then use that limb as armor or a weapon or something. Some decent reviews and kind of one of the bigger surprises of the year, just because no one really knew it was coming. It's from the people who made what was that game? Lords of the Fallen?
Lords of the Fallen.
Is that it? Yeah.
But I'm interested in you telling me about that. I'm going back to Bloodborne soon, which I'm kind of excited about, kind of apprehensive, because I know that I'm going to have the same problems with the healing system. I want to check it out.
Yeah.
I don't want to farm blood vials.
Best game of, what was it, 2013 or something?
Oh, it was more recent than that. It was probably 2014.
2014's best game of the year for
2015, maybe even.
I'm going to say 2015. Maybe you're right. That's a plane.
Cool. So in terms of E3, is there anything that you're excited about? Is there anything that you're... You know, I feel like we should do a whole podcast on E3 predictions, maybe.
When is E3? So is that next week?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's next month.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do a whole... We'll break that down. Break it down! Sorry. We'll do that.
Let me just take a look at when E3 is. Starts June 10th.
Okay.
So we've got a couple of weeks.
Okay. All right.
Devolver Digital is having its own conference.
That's strange. That's exciting. Maybe there's some big Switch announcement there, because I know that they are partnering with Nintendo on Switch, so maybe...
That'd be pretty cool.
Maybe something.
I also expect Nintendo to maybe come out and show some of the indie darling games that maybe they're pulling on. You could also expect that there's a lot of games that have yet to be confirmed for the Switch that are going to end up there. Games like Spelunky that kind of make their way to every platform that just haven't come up yet.
Yeah. I feel like it would be a pretty big E3. I hope it is, because E3 needs to pack on a little bit of heat since last year, since it's been kind of slowing down a little bit. And also because I feel like we have ended that cycle where it's like, there were so many games that when are they ever going to come out? Like Last Guardian, Persona and stuff. And by this year, like the last 2 years have been unbelievably good for games. So we just got so many games. And right now it's like, there's not a whole lot out there on the horizon, you know, like it's like Destino Brothers. It's like that Mario thing.
I mean, I'm really excited for Destiny 2, but at the same time, I'm apprehensive for the same reason that others are. Specifically, it's the fact that PC isn't releasing day and date with the console versions. I could care less about the dedicated servers.
To me, that's a boon, because I'm going to be in Nihon when the console version comes out. And since knowing that the PC version will exist at some point, I have zero interest in the console version. So, very good news for me, because I'm a hateful, petty person, and I don't want anyone else to be playing the game before me. And because, you know, to be fair, it's a, you know, loot-oriented progression game where everyone's playing online. So, if everyone else gets to play while I am sampling takoyaki in Tokyo, then, you know, that's not fair. Like, what if there's some good Legos out there Engrams that are dropping hot drops.
Well, when they announce that release date, I will take off for it.
Takoyaki, Tokyo. I'll be on the Shinkansen.
Right, Ryan. What else do we have to say?
I mean, I feel like you're the one of the bonkers things about this, and really just one of the craziest things, is that and it's a sensical move. Like, it's a sensical move. Is Destiny coming out on Battle.net, aka Blizzard, aka Battle.net, right?
Like, I mean, what this means is that, you know, it's coming out in the Blizzard launcher, so naturally we're going to get some Destiny characters and heroes of the Storm.
That was my first hope, is that, like, they're okay. So to break it down a couple things, the what this means and what this could mean is, what this means is that Activision correctly has a platform for launching games in Battle.net, aka Blizzard, aka Battle.net again, and Blizzard successfully launches Overwatch, which means that Overwatch and Battle.net players have an interest in FPS, not just, you know, I guess, like, RTS and MMO.
The Titan that they were always planning.
Yes, Titan all along was Destiny 2. Weird, I know. But of course, yeah, so it doesn't have anything to do necessarily with Blizzard. My first thought was, yes, I'm excited. Now, is there any sort of, does it feel like Destiny is in the Blizzard camp, even though it's completely not, because it's not developed by Activision, and Blizzard's just using their proprietary launcher to as a front to sell and to service Destiny 2? I guess one of the biggest questions is that Activision has clearly done this because Steam, Valve makes a cut of all the games that are up on Steam.
30%.
Yeah, what?
30%.
Yeah, I thought that was the number, but that sounded insane in my mind. So Valve makes 30% off of all the games in Steam that sell themselves through Steam. That's insanity. Activision already has this launcher that they already have a service that they can do this on, which is, you know, Battle.net. So it makes a lot of sense that Destiny Brothers is one of their absolute most popular franchises. And I really think I have very high hopes for Destiny 2, because Destiny 1 is, like, this phenomenal, you know, one of my favorite experiences with the game, just in my life. And sure. I feel like, you know, it still wasn't there. Like, I recognized it for all its faults. It felt like Destiny 1 was a game that Bungie themselves didn't know what they were doing, because, you know, they literally didn't. Like, there's reports on how they, year to year, were scrapping the entire game and then going back to the drawing board, and that's why the game is so confusing and weird. And through the years and through the expansions, I feel like they got a really good handle on what makes Destiny Destiny. Like, what is Destiny? Destiny is, you know, Vault of Glass. Destiny is Black Hammer, right? Like, Destiny is arcane weird things and weird sci-fi mythology plus drops plus exotics and, you know, weird secrets and moments that lead themselves down, like, the whole community down a rabbit hole, plus, you know, PvP and magic and good gun feel and gameplay and stuff like that. So I feel like Destiny 2 is really Bungie's chance to capitalize on what people got out of Destiny rather than what it was. Like, here's the chance to really take that blueprint and make something of it. So I'm very excited for it, and it makes a lot of sense to me why Activision would say, no, we don't want to share the money. Like, why would you share that extra 30% that could either be going to further development of Destiny or to Activision, where they can just make another bed of money for their CEOs, another golden parachute?
Does this mean we're going to see Call of Duty on the Battle.net app?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, there's the other question that it raises, right? Is, like, now does Activision, if this is successful, does Activision just say, we are launching, like, Battle.net is a name, Blizzard, or whatever they're calling it now, Blizzard Launcher, and probably calling it Battle.net again, has a name and is a functional system, and if we launch things on this functional system, then we have our own competing, you know, Origin, EA Access, Steam, sort of, like, launcher system. So now, like, instead of having a marketplace, you know, like, I don't think they want that, but they have the launcher for their games, all tied up in Battle.net. I could imagine that. I could imagine them saying, just like, Blizzard, now, not only are you this game company, but you're also our proprietary launcher. It raises some questions, and I don't know if there's answers yet. Yeah.
I guess we'll see. Yeah. I guess we'll see what happens.
Signed, sealed, Let's delivered. Oh happens. Yeah.
You know, that might be the deal with games.
It would have been the deal with cheese. Just saying. I mean, not to keep beating a dead cheesemonger, but Sean isn't dead. But you know, EMS week and, you know, Fromage week rolls around once a year. And
that's what you keep telling him. That's, you know,
I need to repeat it for myself, because I thought last time I checked, a lot of our money is going into this Sean character, and you know, he has a purpose on the podcast that he is clearly not fulfilling. So it's frustrating to me.
You and I have been working on this podcast for a long time.
10 years.
And Sean has made as much money as you and I.
Yeah.
Off of this podcast, and he's only been on it a handful of times.
It is insane. It's like, how is he making as much as we do? How does he make as much as we do when he, you know, he's a fair weather podcaster. He comes on every once in a while, and he doesn't even he doesn't play video games. It's a video game podcast. You know, I get that our thing is, you know, we're this wacky, extremely popular video game podcast that is kind of, you know, fringe, and we do stuff like, you know, WTDG. There's supposed to be, you know, another W in there, and we, you know, it's, where is it? It's stuff like that that our fans, our listeners and viewers love. And one of the things I think that people appreciate about the podcast is that we're the only video game podcast that has a member that doesn't play video games on it. You know, that's exciting to people. People like that. They like that, you know, it's a video game podcast that has two members who play the video games, and then there's one member who doesn't, and he talks about selling cheese for a living. And that's good. You know, it gives us a different sort of Venn diagram to play on. But at the end of these kind of days, I got to ask myself, what's it all worth? What are we paying this person for? You know?
This has been WTDG Podcast. You could find us online at WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDG Podcast, or on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
And thank you, Ryan Gowan, crying for the use of your music. We use the intro and outro Revive off the new album Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at the Run for Cover Bandcamp.
All right. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, James. No third person, which is another feature of Sean on this podcast, to be able to give us the damn sign off.
And Baby Makes Cheese. Thank you.